855-34-CHARTER and get the good internet.
Some restrictions apply. Call for details.
Picture perfect. That's the goal we have for every purchase you make at Bob's Camera and Video of Barry. We're in the business of helping you capture, share, and treasure all those magic moments in your life. So whether it's a camera, a lens, or a tote bag and a picture frame, Bob's understands that preserving your memories is important. Come see us. We can help. We still develop film. Bob's Camera and Video, 84 North Main Street in Barrie, everybody's hometown, or on the web at bobscamerashop.com.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. A little slushy out there today. Thanks for spending part of your morning with us. Coming up on the program this morning, in our second hour, we're going to conclude the program. We'll talk about our canine friends, Bruce Cameron, who's really has a series of books out about dogs. He also, his big breakthrough book, you may have heard of this guy. He wrote a book called 8 Tips to Date My Teenage Daughter, or 8 Rules, I'm sorry, to Date My Teenage Daughter. Sold like a gazillion books, got then turned into a sitcom on TV. So I think that was kind of his big moment. So we'll chat with him coming up in hour number two. Also, we're going to be joined by a new biographer about Napoleon Bonaparte. So that'll be coming your way at about 10:20 this morning. And we're going to learn that he was actually a much nicer person, and he was kind of a pleasant dictator, pleasant emperor. We'll also take your phone calls throughout the program. We'd love to hear from you at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And our toll-free line's 877-291-8255. We're going to continue our discussion about health care reform this morning. And Ham Davis, who's been a longtime journalist, was a one-time regulator, also a one-time hospital official, so he's got really great perspective on healthcare reform. He blogs at a site called A Vermont Journal, and he's been kind enough to join us now a couple of times on the program to talk about the state and also the national efforts on healthcare reform. Ham, thanks for joining us. How are you this morning?
Good, good. Good morning, Mark.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
So let's talk about the election here for a moment. You actually wrote after the election and did some analysis of it, but let's talk about where things stand right now, about a month after the election. And I guess one of the critical questions here is, for one thing, actually, the election's not decided. So is that an issue here when we talk about health care reform?
Well, I don't think it's an issue as far as who's actually going to be the governor. I think that's pretty obvious. It's the governor's going to be Peter Snelling. But the way that that happens,
Shumlin.
I think. I'm. What did I say?
Snelling.
How did I do that? I'm having more coffee. Peter Shulman will be the governor, but the way that he gets to be the governor, I think, has very significant implications for what's going to happen in Vermont going forward, not only for health care reform, but for really for the political trajectory of the whole state. I think for the I think the Republican performance was surprising to everybody, probably surprising. It was certainly surprising to Shumlin, whatever anybody says, and it probably was surprising to the Republicans themselves. But what it does is it leaves a lot of questions about where we go from here. The most immediate one, it seems to me, in just purely practical political terms, is what the Republicans do about the vote in the legislature when it comes up. The legislature has to vote for either Scott Milne or Peter Shulman. What Vermont legislatures have almost always done in the past is to vote for the person who had the most votes. And that clearly, in this case, is Peter Shulman. There's been a lot of talk, however, that maybe the Republicans, in fact, will just vote for Milne for whatever reason, because they really hate Peter Shumlin, or just because they want to express themselves or something like that. I think that's going to be very interesting. If the Republicans vote, I think they would be crazy, but they might do it. If they vote for anybody, if a significant number of Republicans in the legislature vote for Milne, then what they're doing is they're setting a precedent that could come back to really damage them in 2016. Given what's the outcome of this election, it's perfectly reasonable to suggest that or to anticipate that the 2016 election for governor could be very, very, very competitive.
Yep.
And you could easily have a situation in 2016 where a Republican candidate got a majority of the vote but less than 50%. And would then have to go into a democratically controlled legislature to determine who the winner was. In that case, if the Republicans this year go out and vote for Milne, then they can be just looking at that. Then the Democrats have every reasonable right to look at that as a precedent and to vote for their own guy in 2016. That would be crazy.
If there were a Prague, say, running against a Democrat and split the left, so to speak.
Right. Well, there wouldn't be likely to be a progressive in 2016, I don't think, although that's a very interesting issue. I think, in fact, I don't know that we have time for it today, but I think there are all of the players are significantly affected by this, by the last election. Republicans, Democrats, progressives, the Tea Party wing of the Republican Party, the more center piece of the Republican Party, all of them are looking at a different landscape, I believe. Now, there's actually two ideas that come out of this election. One is that it really was an unusual election. It really didn't mean that much. There was such a small turnout. There were no strong people at the top of the ticket. There was no presidential candidate. All that will change in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
But my own view is that there aren't any elections, almost none. I've been watching elections since 1960, and I think elections mean something, and I think that it means something for all of the players as we go forward now if the Democrats have to really decide where they're going, what they want to be. Most of them have just been going along. It's all assumed to be a Democratic state. They've been following the Shumlin lead. That all of a sudden looks really suspect. Are they going to keep doing that? The Republicans have been mixed. The Republicans have a huge break right within their own party. The right wing of the Republican Party doesn't really like Scott Milne at all. They like Feliciano. So right. What are they going to do?
Right.
So anyway, I think this thing is shifting as we go forward.
244-1777, toll free 877-291-8255. How damaged is Peter Shumlin?
I think he's very, very damaged. Very damaged. I think it's more than most people realize. I think the spell has sort of been broken. It's not that everybody has loved Peter Shumlin ever since he's been a major player in Vermont. That just isn't true. There's been a lot of people that dislike him. There's been constant background noise about whether he's sneaky or whether you can trust him and so forth. But there was also a very strong sense of inevitability. Shumlin is too tough to beat. Shumlin is too smart politically for anybody else. Shumlin has too much money. It's too blue a state anyway that you just can't beat a Democrat. All of those things are gone. And I just think that, Shumlin has a very big job ahead rebuilding himself as we go forward.
All right. So how and to what extent does it affect his ability in the next few months here to get the legislature to do what he wants? Or does it not matter?
Oh, I think it matters. I think it matters tremendously. I think that the legislature is loose, that it's on its own, that it's not clear at all, for example, that the legislature is even going to aggressively take up health care reform, let alone pass this giant tax bill to fund a single-payer system. I think there's no chance for that in 2015. I don't know what, I can't predict what will happen in 2016, but I think that Peter Shumlin's ability to manage the legislature has been very badly damaged.
So what does the legislature do in 2015? The governor's supposedly going to roll out a plan, a financing plan, in January. So then what are they going to do?
I don't know what they're going to do, but I'm...
Let me just sit on that for a year?
Oh, sure they can. Why not? What they could do...
You think the public will go for that?
Oh, sure. I don't think there's any question about what... I don't think the public has a strong view here. The strong view... The public actually had no interest in coming out and voting for Peter Shumlin as an object of their support for single payer. Did that happen? I don't think so. Nobody was out there for that. Democrats stayed home in droves all over the state. And granted, the turnout was low, but Vermont is a small state, Mark. And I don't know about you, okay, but I can't count in the last month the number of Democrats, standard, run-of-the-mill, hardcore Democrats who, if you ask them what they think, say, I'm not voting for Peter Shumlin. Peter Shumlin knows that. So I wouldn't be surprised that this sounds like contrarian view, but I wouldn't be surprised if there wasn't much action in the legislature at all on single payer. They could just sit there.
Wow.
What are you going to do, sue them?
But right. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll free 877-291-8255. But when you say that, you know, well, go back here. What do you mean by the legislature is loose? What do you mean by the word loose?
I mean, I think that they are. They have. They've gone through a period. They've for several years. They have been quite disciplined. They have been. They passed Act 48. By a huge margin, very complex legislation. You know, I know you're skeptical about my view about how great Act 48 is. Nevertheless, the fact is they passed it. I'm not trying to beat up on you, Mark. And they were pretty much in lockstep. They have followed the leadership of the governor and of Shap Smith really without much question. Do you disagree with that?
I'm not sure. I mean, I just,
what have they done? What have they done that Shap Smith and Peter Shumlin didn't want them to do?
Well, I'd be actually a little hard pressed to come up with one off the top of my head.
Me too. Even off the bottom of your head.
Right.
I mean, the reality is that they've just been.
That would be my neck. Yeah.
they basically have been a pretty disciplined body. They've been getting clear leadership on issues. Okay. When there was some movement, for example, in the legislature to raise taxes because they really have all of their shortfall, bang, the hammer comes down. Shumlin says no, Shap Smith says no, and no dies right on the spot.
Yeah.
Now what's going to happen? I mean, and it's not just Shumlin's who's political future is in question here.
Right.
Here's a question for you. What about Shap Smith?
Right.
If Shumlin didn't run, and there's been speculation in 2016, and there is speculation that he might not run in 2016, he understands what happened better than anybody else. It was a rejection of him, and he knows it. If he decided not to run, then who would run? Would it be Shap? If it's going to be Shap has no way to know whether Shumlin will actually run in 2016. If Shumlin doesn't run, what does Shap do? House speakers are very powerful, but nobody knows them. If you did if you took a name recognition poll for Shap Smith today across the whole population of Vermont, my guess the issue would really be whether you were talking middle single digits or high single digits that even know who he is. So if he wanted to run, then he's got to start thinking about, okay, what do I do in 2015 and 2016 to tee myself up to run for governor? I don't know what that is.
How about raising $2 billion in taxes and replacing premiums? How would that work?
I don't know how it would work, but I'd be interested to see if anybody wanted to bet on that happening. In 2015, certainly.
Because getting back to your question, I think a bigger issue is that I don't know about the relationship between the legislature and the administration. It doesn't seem to be all that great. And if Peter Shumlin's going to get his way in this, he better have a darn good relationship with the legislature.
Well, I don't think he does have a very good relationship with the legislature. I think that's obvious. I mean, he's already backed off, for example. He was going to make some rescissions. He just said, okay, we're doing this, which is what he's been doing right along.
Right.
But then all of a sudden, he decided he had to back up a little bit and say, you know, we're going to have to talk to the legislature about that. The legislature, I think that's going to be a defining difference in 2015 compared to the previous two sessions. He's going to have that the legislature. That's what I mean by the legislature being loose. I'm not sure how you predict what the legislature is going to do in there. If Peter Shumlin thinks that he can guarantee how the legislature is going to move, he's crazy. I don't know how they're going to move, and I'm not sure they know how they're going to move. But they're not. I think it's fair to say this, Mark. The Vermont legislature is not reliable anymore in terms of leadership from the governor's office.
244-1777 is our local number. Toll free 877-291-8255. Flesh this out for me. I don't understand how you've had people in this state, not just Republicans, Democrats too, people in the media, mm-hmm. saying, you know, where's the plan? Where's the plan? How are you going to finance all this? And you think that they could roll this out in January and then it gets kind of put on a shelf. I can't believe that. I can't believe people are going to stand for that.
Well, that's interesting. Let me ask you this then, Mark. This is the biggest thing that the state has ever done. In a certain sense, health care reform is the most complex piece of domestic legislation that has existed anywhere in the country since Lyndon Johnson's Great Society in the middle 1960s, when Johnson described, based on the Kennedy initiatives, decided just rebuild society from the ground up. They had model cities, they had Head Start, they had Reach Up, they had community action, they had all kinds of racial programs. The whole thing. Tell me. From September 1 of this year until November 4th of this year, how much political discussion from the candidates did you, or especially from Peter Shumlin, how much discussion did you hear about his issue, which is just as big as the Great Society program? How much?
You mean you're talking about healthcare?
Yeah.
Well, there was a lot of discussion about the Vermont Health Connect. I think that sucked a lot of the sort of healthcare discussion, the energy in that direction, with a big problem there. And I think that what happened with that is that it really created this feeling as though government was incapable of running that program, and how are they going to run something even bigger? I think that was the big question that was happening in the fall.
Right, but that's the Vermont Health Connect is not coming on the floor.
It's got
nothing to do with the Shumlin plan. The Shumlin plan is all about how you rebuild the delivery system, how you raise all of this money to back out private premiums. It's a completely different subject, okay? There was no discussion about that at all. Peter Shumlin from September 1, or Labor Day, whenever that was, until Election Day, said virtually nothing about his program. Health Connect is Obama's program.
That's true.
He said zero about his plan. Did that blow away the public? Was the public all excited about that? I don't know if there's any evidence that it was. The public doesn't even know about it.
But I think the public was waiting for this funding plan to come out.
Well, it will come out. I mean, I think that's one thing we can say for certain. The whole nine yards, Shumlin is going to push the whole nine yards out there on the table into the well of the House within 2 weeks of the legislature convening and probably earlier. And it may come out. There's an excellent possibility that the plan will come out before the legislature starts. I mean the whole of it. Shumlin's going to just have to shove it all out there, everything, even though it's not all completely built even yet, mm-hmm. okay? So it's all going to come out there, and it's going to be huge, absolutely huge. It's never been seen before. It's brand new. And you're a legislature, and you don't have a clue. And you're going to be looking at something that is like a 600-page textbook. And somebody's going to say, okay, the test, you know, is whenever. And you're going to think, many of those people are going to think they don't even know where to start.
So do you think it would be wise for either the governor, the speaker, or somebody in a leadership position to telegraph this and say, this isn't going to happen in 2015. Don't get your expectations up.
I don't know. I mean, that I don't know what's the right thing for them to do. I mean, the reality is, the governor has said consistently since even before he was elected during his campaign that we'd have a federal law allowed a state to ask for a waiver to run a single payer program, that Vermont would have this program ready to go in 2017. One of the first questions that they'll answer is, they'll concede to you, I guarantee, is that it won't. 2017 is impossible, totally impossible. Anybody thinks that is way beyond fantasy land. So now you're out to 20.
Why? Why is 2017 impossible?
Because there's just way too much. There's just way too much work to do. If you start studying, right, you and I have talked about Act 48 before. If you read nothing else in it but the Mullen triggers, okay, which were, you know, drafted and inserted into the bill, amended the bill by Kevin Mullen, who's a conservative Republican from Rutland, one of the best pieces of legislative work I've seen in years. Okay, you've got to be able to demonstrate that you've got costs under iron control. You've got to demonstrate that what the effect will be on the economy. You've got to be able to assure people that you're going to have enough money in there to keep a solid healthcare system operating. You're going to have to change. You're going to have payment reform. All of that stuff is huge. And just think in the last 3 weeks of what Republicans have had to say about the connection of John Gruber mm-hmm. to this plan.
Yeah.
That they were in a deep hole before Gruber ever showed up. Gruber just doubled the size of the hole. So are they really going to have action in 2015? Don't bet your house on it, Mark, because you're going to end up living in your car.
Maybe put those headphones on. 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Those heated seats might come in handy. Let's go to Cabot. Tony, good morning. How's it going?
Yeah, I'm good. It's going well here. We got a little bit of mist, but hoping that'll stop. I'm really enjoying the conversation, and I'm enjoying your guests' perspective of the intricacies of what's going on between the legislature and the administration. I'm wondering if he has any perspective or feeling about the extent to which the voters or the residents of the state feel connected at all to what it is that's going on under the Golden Dome up there. My guess is that for several reasons, maybe because it's such a complex process of trying to manage this thing, and especially in the face of the most recent elections, that there's a lot of confusion, and my guess is that people don't feel that they're connected in any way to what's going on. I think that they would say, yeah, these folks that we elect are supposed to be representing our interests, but that the voters aren't sure that that's actually going on. I don't know if I'm being clear about this. So,
well, help me. What do you mean when you say that you think that there's confusion? What's the confusion you think voters have?
That they're ambivalent or worse about it, because I think that they're feeling that things happen up there regardless of what the voters' interests are. That it's something, it's a machine that runs itself over there, and yes, we have elections, really doesn't matter much because they're going to do what they want, and so that the person who's paying taxes doesn't feel that anybody who's up there spending their tax money has any interest in their perspective.
All right. Okay.
Tony, I think that's a really fascinating question, which is a way of saying that I guess, a self-interested way of saying I don't really know the answer. But my sense is that you really are right here. And I think that is that the where the answer to that question lies, deep sort of in the way the whole political system of the society works, is in fact going to be a significant driver here. I can't predict exactly where they are, but I agree with you. I don't think the public has any real feel for what we're talking about here, what the dimensions of this problem are, what it would actually look like on the ground. And the reason they don't is that nobody has ever told that to them. So well, you have this really kind of anomalous situation where something that's been in development for 4 years, count them, 4 years, the real dimensions of that are almost entirely unknown. And it's huge and complex. What they do know about and what has destroyed the trust, their trust in very significantly in Shumlin and in state government generally, is the failures of the exchange. The Republicans and I think have been able to establish a narrative here that has significant power, which is that they don't know the details of this at all, but here's what they see. We had this Obamacare thing that was the exchange. We gave it to Shumlin's people, and they blew it. That was health care reform first. Then second is going to be Shumlin's plan, okay? And based on the performance of the exchange, then it's reasonable to expect that if they blew an easy problem, they're going to blow a hard problem.
Okay, but I just raised that issue about 10 minutes ago with you, and you blew me out of the water saying that it wasn't healthcare reform, that the website isn't healthcare reform, and that they're really all totally detached. I think the public combines them.
They're separate in technology. They're separate in government. They're separate. A lawyer would separate them in a New York minute. Okay, but the public aren't lawyers, and the public aren't health policy specialists. The public are just going to work every day, and all they can see is what's out there. And I think the great failure the great mistake that Shumlin made was he passed up the chance in this election, in this campaign. I keep thinking of that 2 month block when people were listening. Labor Day to Election Day, they're listening. Shumlin told them zero about this, a giant plan that he's going to shove out there that they've never seen before. Big mistake.
When you say that the picture is not clear to the public, so is that Shumlin's fault? Is that the media's fault? Was there anything out there to make clearer for people?
The whole plan was out there. The plan's been in development for 4 years. It's not like there's nothing that exists. It was never talked about. The media, I think it's fair to say, have tried, okay? But it's for various reasons. Right from the first election, Shumlin barely got elected the first time in 2010.
Right.
Okay? Immediately, he began to put the whole idea of how much it was going to cost, holding that under wraps. Now, there was just no way to get at that. And the reason was, for the first 2 years, was if he only won by 4,000 votes or whatever it was in the first election,
right,
he couldn't drop all of this money of him without running the risk of losing in the second election.
Yeah.
Now, in the second election, he won by a mile. At that point, he had plenty of political capital to push it out there. Guess what? He didn't do it then either. So the public really has never seen the effect. Has no way to have an idea of what's coming at them in January. And it isn't that there's stuff that he could have pointed to that's hugely positive. The Green Mountain Care Board, which is part of the program, okay, has cut the trajectory of healthcare inflation to a third of what it was. That's a huge thing. That's a success. If you go out into the public and say how much success has healthcare reform had in Vermont, guess what the answer is going to get?
They're going to say zero because of the website.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why I'm. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. All right. We're on the same page here. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll free 877-291-8255. Let's head up to Sheldon. Ruth, good morning.
Yes, it sounds like your guest is saying that the public is ignorant about what's going on, but we are not. We're very much engaged, and we're very angry because Shumlin wouldn't tell us what the plan was. And when you had Chap Smith on your show, Mark, he sounded really silly because he couldn't defend the governor in any way whatsoever because the governor hadn't told him and they hadn't told the legislature and they don't have a clue and nobody has a clue. And I told you from the beginning, Shumlin never intended to do this. He only did it to get the votes, which he did manage to get. But right now, everything in Vermont is falling apart. And what we're seeing is reality. We're seeing businesses going out of business. We're seeing people having very hard financial times. I am still naive enough to think that Scott Milne will be our next governor, because between now and January, I think things are going to fall so much apart that even the legislature isn't going to want to vote for Shumlin. And I know that they're a democratically controlled legislature. I know that. But how can they vote for a man who has deceived the public like he has? And thank you for listening to me.
Thanks for your call. Ham, what would you say to that?
Well, I understand that. I understand the sentiment. I think that what our caller has said is that she started out by saying that they weren't ignorant about the plan and then said that they were. The reality is that nobody in Sheldon knows the details of Shumlin's plan, nor does anybody in the rest of Vermont know about the details of Mr. Shumlin's plan. Neither did Chap Smith. Just trust me. If Chap Smith doesn't know, then nobody in the public is going to know.
Take a short break. We'll come back, continue our discussion. Ham Davis is joining us, a longtime journalist, one-time regulator, also one-time hospital official, and was actually, going back to speaking of campaigns, was actually one of the boys on the bus. We'll take a quick commercial break. Back after this.
Hi, this is Kathy from the Stowe Street Emporium in Waterbury. We are thrilled to be part of our wonderful town this holiday season and want all to know about Waterbury's annual holiday stroll and River of Light Lantern Parade on Saturday, December 6th. Stroll into the Emporium and join us for cookies and refreshments all day long. And then at 5 o'clock, watch the parade, which starts at Thatcher Brook School and ends at Dacro Field with a bonfire and hot chocolate. The event is free to all, and this year's theme is Our Town. At the Emporium, we carry the best greeting cards and holiday box cards. Also, check out our kitchen items, home decor, wine and beer gadgets, men's and women's clothing and shoes, accessories, jewelry galore, children's apparel and gifts, and of course, loads of Christmas ornaments and stocking stuffers. Our holiday hours are 9:30 till 6 daily, Sundays 11 to 5. We look forward to seeing all our happy shoppers at the Stowe Street Emporium. Enter our world of magic at 23 Stowe Street in historic downtown Waterbury.
There is nothing quite like the feel of Vermont flannel. It's the feel of Vermont. Warm and cozy, Vermont flannel craftsmanship goes into every stitch. Crafted in the USA, many consider Vermont flannel clothing the best on the planet, as we do here at WDEV. Looking for a special, unique holiday gift for your employees and loyal customers? A made in the USA Vermont flannel gift is perfect. Quality beyond compare. A gift of comfort they'll feel good with for years to come and remember you for it. Vermont flannel clothing, sleepwear, and much more.
Radio Vermont has had tremendous response to the Vermont flannel patchwork blankets and scarves we've used. Visit VermontFlannel.com or locally visit one of their stores, East Barry, Woodstock, Vermont, on Route 7 in Ferrisburg, on Church Street near Ben & Jerry's, and for the holidays at University Mall.
Ho, ho, ho! Tis the season for Vermont flannel gifts. The feel of Vermont makes me feel good. I'd be most happy to deliver Vermont flannel anywhere. VermontFlannel.com.
The condition of your teeth impacts your entire health. All Smiles Family Dental Center features an artisan quality denture lab on the Barry Montpelier Road. Now you don't have to travel for affordable dentures. Purchase our comfortable and natural-appearing dentures within 90 days, and we'll pay for your oral exam and digital x-rays. Please don't hesitate to learn more or to arrange a free initial consultation. Call 476-8700. That's 476-8700. Or visit myvtsmiles.com. All smiles on the Barry Montpelier Road. Are you all smiles?
All smiles, all smiles.
Hi, this is Rich Harvey from Montpelier Pharmacy and Waterbury Pharmacy. If you're on Medicare and have a Part D plan with SilverScript, you may have received a notice that we are not signed up with SilverScript. I can assure you that both Montpelier Pharmacy and Waterbury Pharmacy are signed up as SilverScript Plus and SilverScript Choice Pharmacies. SilverScript made an error. I don't think that it was intentional, but it's just another way that big corporations put local Vermont businesses out of business. I'd rather be giving you advice on your prescriptions right now, but this is really important to us. SilverScript will be correcting this in the next couple of weeks. Hopefully they'll send you a letter about this, but if not, please know that we are, in fact, enrolled in SilverScript. If you have any questions about this or about your prescriptions, give us a call at Montpelier Pharmacy, 223-4633, or at Waterbury Pharmacy, 244-7701. We're a local Vermont company, and we're very proud to be independent. Thank you.
Continue our discussion. We've been talking this morning with Ham Davis. He blogs about Vermont healthcare reform at A Vermont Journal. I'm just reminiscing about the Paul Lawrence book, Mocking Justice, about a rogue cop here in Vermont. And coming maybe perhaps to a movie theater near you. All right, let's head over to Williamstown. Rama, good morning. How's it going?
Good morning, gentlemen. Hey, listen, two quick comments to make here. One is we got to stop saying Act 48 because it should be referred to as the single payer legislation. Act 48's been somewhat modified by Act 144 of a couple years later. And, you know, it's important that people understand that some of these things do change over time. So it shouldn't be Act 48 anymore. It should be single-payer legislation.
Okay.
The other thing is, I at the end of the day, I voted for Feliciano, and I voted for Feliciano because I looked at Shulman. He was great on vision, had a really good vision, but he's been proven to be a horrible manager. And I couldn't vote for Milne because, personally, I don't think Milne has either vision or the ability to manage change very well. He might have been good at sitting on what we had right now, which was actually what he was a good part of his platform, and not managing any change. Whereas Feliciano could have managed to change. And I would have liked to have seen Feliciano working with a solidly Democratic legislature that was going to hold him to the single-payer legislation and make him push it through, because I think somebody with his capabilities and his abilities would have done a really great job of helping to manage the change that's coming. And that's something, that's where Shulman fell down on, and he hasn't done very well on a number of issues with the management.
Thanks for your call.
I appreciate that. The point noted on Act 48, it will never happen again. It sounded like an old city editor I had who, when I would write something like that, would tell me I was an idiot and that nobody knew what Act 48 was, so I'm never doing it again.
To be able to refer to Act 60 and everybody knows what it was.
No, I don't know. If you go down Church Street, I'm who is this caller? I forget the name.
Rama.
I'm with Rama. If you go down, walk down Church, well, he may not walk down Church Street, but if you walk down Church Street and you ask 100 people what Act 60 is, no more than 6 will know.
All right.
Okay, so Rama, yeah, I am there.
Okay. Feliciano would have been able to, and the mismanagement of Shumlin. I know you agree he's not a great manager.
Yeah, he hasn't been. I mean, everybody can change. I don't want to rule it out. I'm a, you know, I, 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 I have a high regard for Shumlin's abilities. I mean, I think it's a question of what he decides to do. What I do disagree with is, I think that the main support for Feliciano is the right wing of the Republican Party, people like Darcy Johnson, who loved Feliciano, and who really, I think much of the right wing thinks that the same thing about Mr. Milne that Rahma does, okay? What I don't agree with Rahma about is, what I don't agree with our caller about, is that I think that if you had Feliciano in there, that Feliciano simply would have dumped healthcare as quickly as he could. I don't think he would have pushed it forward. I just don't believe that. He hated it. He always said he hated it. That's why the right wing liked him so much. That's why they disliked Milne, because Milne didn't say that.
Mm-hmm. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll free 877-291-8255. You work for a period of time up at Fletcher Allen. What do you think Fletcher Allen is worried about most in this whole healthcare reform and what the state might be up to?
Well, that's a hard question. It's not just Fletcher Allen. It's also Dartmouth Hitchcock, which is sort of in the same boat. And I think that John Brumstead's view of this, John Brumstead is the CEO of Fletcher Allen. I think that Brumstead has made a basic calculation, which is that that healthcare reform is coming, irrespective of what Pete Shumlin does, irrespective of what the Vermont legislature does, irrespective of what anybody else does, that the old system of health care, which the Republicans have not had to defend, is unsustainable. And so I think that John Brumstead's view is that this is coming, and a big institution like Fletcher Allen really has two choices. Either they get out in front of this and try and make it the best they possibly can, or they get run over. And I know John Brumstead real well, and I would say that John Brumstead has no interest in getting run over.
Mm-hmm. So when you say the other option is to make the best out of a situation, so how do they make the best out of this?
Well, what both, not just John Brumstead, but also Jim Weinstein at Dartmouth, and also many other key players in Vermont. It's never been written about. I haven't written about it yet. I'm going to, okay? But CEOs like Paul Bankston in St. Johnsbury, like Tom Huebner in Rutland, like Tom D. in Bennington, these people understand that they have to make this system work. The system has to be better. It has to have much higher quality. It has to have much more consistency. And primarily, it has to have reasonable costs. And they understand that the only way that can happen is if they do it. And that's one of the greatest hopes for healthcare reform, I think, in Vermont, completely irrespective of Pete Shumlin's management ability or whatever Shap Smith decides to do when he talks to the chairman of his Ways and Means Committee, all of that stuff. The medical community itself in Vermont, almost all of it, not all, but most of it, is really, really understands that the old system wouldn't work and that they have to build a new one.
So where are the inefficiencies that they got to squeeze out?
Well, I haven't written that one yet, but the reality is that the care, okay, is just badly, badly, badly distributed, because the system was, for example, I'll just give you one. And I have written this about this on my blog. Okay, thinking of Rahma again. I'm not going to say DRG 470. I'm going to say all the category of lower joint replacement, namely new knees and new hips, are delivered in very small hospitals all over Vermont. 12, 13 hospitals do this kind of operation. That just should not happen. The very small hospitals do that simply because they need the money to operate.
And
because those kinds of operations, they can charge for that twice. what the operations cost in a bigger center. That kind of thing has to go. It just has to go. And that's just one example. There are hundreds.
Well, then how are they going to survive if they don't have their profitable procedures they do?
What you're going to have to do, and that's one of the great things, we're going to, if the Shumlin plan is complete, that's one of the things that will be in it. If you take out of the Vermont Community Hospitals stuff that they shouldn't do,
right,
then you're going to have to find a way to cross-subsidize the stuff that needs to stay, that they do need to do. And nobody's seen that plan, but that's, you've got to figure out how to do that. I've talked to people about that for years. My idea was always the bag of quarters, okay? These people need extra money. Do you want them to be doing operations that they shouldn't do, or just want a pickup truck full of bags of quarters and drive it there and give it to them so that they can do what they do need to do? They can take care of a person, the woman having a baby. They can take care of a logger who nicks an artery with a chainsaw. They can take care of the guy that runs into the tree with his pickup truck. They need to do that. We need that. We don't need people doing hip operations in tiny places at tiny volumes that have huge, way too high costs and almost certainly very questionable quality.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm wondering as you say this, when you talk about a place like Fletcher Allen, they have this big or significant expansion proposal, this idea of these twin towers, private rooms, infection being a big issue. And I think the number is something like $180 million. So what does the Greenmount Care Board do with something like that?
Well, we're going to, I think in that case, the Green Mountain Care Board is going to approve it. The real question is, do they really need it? Okay, that's number one.
Yeah.
But the even more important question, not more important question, but the equally important question is, can they get that built within a inflation rate in their budget that is sustainable? In other words, if the target is 3% per year max, okay, mm-hmm. can they build the bed tower? They hate to call it a bed tower, so it got some long, complicated name to, so they can avoid saying bed tower, but it's a bed tower. And the question is, can they get the bed tower built within their current, within a reasonable cost trajectory going forward from now? And they say in their application they can.
You mean basically kind of absorb it within their costs every year?
Yeah, they have a budget they're under heavy pressure to meet those budget targets, and they have met them.
Okay, so if they have $180 million to build these buildings, why not build the buildings and put that $180 million towards healthcare?
Well, they think that the 180, I think it's 188, but whatever it is,
yeah.
Okay, whatever it is, they think it's exactly about healthcare.
All right.
But
you know what I mean. I mean, they're putting it into a building as opposed to procedures.
If you want to look at something like that, the beds are going to be used for people who need a bed. And the one of the problems in modern medicine is that old hospital rooms are too small for modern equipment.
Yeah.
Okay, if you're really in there and your body is trashed out, then there's all kind of equipment that's got to get in there. If you can't get the equipment in the room, then it's a mess.
And you got a roommate.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Who's also, they've got their own stuff.
Well, I've been there.
And family. And,
yeah. Well, I've been there, and I didn't mind my roommate, but somebody could.
I wonder if they minded you, though, you know.
They probably did.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I didn't care about that.
244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Let's head over to Hyde Park. Ken, good morning. How's it going?
Good morning, guys. Pretty good. 2 points. First, your whole point about lower joint replacement is, I think, very wrong. Vermont has a very strong body of people who are athletic and very well informed and know very much who the best doctors are to go to for joint and hip replacement. Those docs are located at those small hospitals. to the point where we know the docs, we know who's best, et cetera, et cetera. And to funnel everybody into Fletcher Allen would be a huge mistake. You'd be losing probably the best docs in the state in terms of doing those joint replacements. Now, let's back off to 10,000 feet and look at the whole healthcare reform thing. I think what happened is that someone got a really good idea. He got sold a bill of goods by a bunch of consultants. I used to be one of those consultants. You can look at the people sort of walking away from the whole thing. When consultants start walking away and have other things to do, it means they're not really quite sure about what's going on. I don't think that someone understood the extent to which he was facing a no-win situation, and he's been trying to find a win situation where there is none. Very specifically, small businesses, maybe some percentage of small businesses provide health care, a larger percent don't provide health care. If you force these, you can either subsidize the businesses that do provide health care by taking away the cost, or you can pay by letting the state pay for the insurance rather than the business, or you can penalize the, and probably put out of business a lot of the small businesses that can't afford to pay for health care. So you have a no-win question. You have a no-win decision to make there.
All right.
And I think he's been trying to find a win decision.
Okay. Let me interrupt. Let me have our guest comment. Thank you.
I disagree with your first conclusion, although I understand, I think you said it from Hyde Park. That would be in the Copley Hospital service area.
Yep.
Copley is a special case, and they do a lot of joint replacements there. They do their volumes of joint replacements are on the same order of magnitude as Fletcher Allen and Dartmouth Hitchcock. Now, it's a complex case. Simply what I would ask you this, I would say to this gentleman is, if we have three hip replacements, okay, then we're going to get it done for $15,000 and get them done in $15,000 a piece in Fletcher Allen, and we're going to have to pay your guys $33,000 a piece. Mm-hmm. Do you want to pay the difference?
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Let's go to Corinth Forbes.
Good morning. How are you?
Great.
We could go back to square one, this whole issue, and I don't think anybody is out of tune with trying to deal with health care, no matter how much it comes up. But there's so much discussion in so many different areas that everyone's quite confused. I would love to hear somebody that's in the trenches, in other words, a doctor or a doctor and administrative part that has to deal with all of this thing. And I'd like to hear from them as to what they would do to correct the situation or put together a program that really works. I don't want to hear the negative parts. We all know that.
Okay. Can I interrupt you there? Let me get him to take on that question. So that's a good question. We're almost out of time here. What do you think the doctors want in Vermont?
Well, I think that's a huge question, and I think it's a great question, too. And we haven't talked about it at all. It's one of the things that hasn't been talked about. But a major player in the whole scheme is not simply Shumlin's plan. The other side of the equation is equally important in my judgment, and that is the fact of the establishment of OneCare, which is made up entirely of doctors and hospitals. Now, it isn't that there aren't stresses and strains within OneCare, but the beauty of the Shumlin plan and of the, I'm never saying Act 48 again, I promise that, right? So the beauty of the single-payer law is that it contemplates that the doctors and the hospitals have a major role, at least a minimum 50% role in the decisions about how hospital care gets delivered in Vermont. I think that is just awesome because, in point of fact, while the single-payer law is great, okay, no government structure and no collection of bureaucrats, I don't care how smart they are or how many of them you have, can really make decisions about how to practice medicine and how to distribute medical resources. That's why OneCare is so important.
Do you think doctors are being heard? Do you think that their input's being heard in this whole thing?
Absolutely. The doctors are absolutely being heard. That doesn't mean they all like it. Lots of them don't like it. But if you just read, for example, B. Grouse, who's the executive director of the Vermont Hospital Association, just wrote a piece very much supporting it.
Mm-hmm. She'll be on the program on Tuesday. Thanks for that, giving me that lead.
Glad to help, Mark.
Thanks for coming in, as always. Ham Davis blogs about healthcare reform. You can follow him at avermontjournal.com. avermontjournal.com. Make sure you spell out the Vermont. That's going to wrap things up for hour number one. We'll be back in just a couple of moments here. We'll kick off hour number two with our White House crew. Also coming up next hour, we're going to learn a little bit about Napoleon Bonaparte, new biography out about him. And also we'll talk about our friends in the canine world as well, too. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury Montpelier. News is coming your way next.